Robin Hood Radio presents Agriculture from Tucana Farms. Here's Mark Scherzer.
One of the iconic books of our foodie era, Michael Pollan's Omnivore's Dilemma, is so titled because it tries to resolve for its readers what's, for some, is an anxiety-inducing dilemma. How to choose from a vast menu of options what we ought to eat. Human beings are not the only omnivores. Pigs are another prominent example. But here at the top of the food chain, we exercise considerably greater autonomy in our food choices. And as compared to other humans, we in advanced industrial economies seem to have even greater choice than most. A bewildering array of foods, from minimally processed real foods to overprocessed food products, described by some as the end of food, from which to choose. Pollan did a particularly good job, as I recall, of suggesting criteria by which to make food choices. He gave solid reasons to justify those criteria, with an emphasis on sustainability, social responsibility, health, and the pleasures involved in preparation, taste, and social sharing. But along with the eater's dilemma, there's also the closely related farmer's dilemma. This is a concern Pollan did less to address, but it's a topic we, as some of you will recall, have often returned to. How do we both have loving, caring relationships with our livestock as fellow creatures, and yet still manage to eat them? Peter and I have faced this dilemma in a particularly acute way in the last few weeks. The current demand for lamb has definitely outstripped our supply. A restaurant, which exhausted the entire supply of ground lamb we posted on the Farm to Table app, inquired whether there was a possibility of a more steady supply. And a butcher shop, which has periodically ordered whole lambs through Farm to Tables, as well made clear they would like to be getting more of our lambs. In our concerted effort to keep our flock size down to a reasonable size for the winter, though, we in the last several months sold off 18 ewelings, which will form the breeding core of two new flocks of caracals, and sent another 13 lambs, mostly wethers, that's castrated ramblings, off to market. We've kept only a few of each season's ewe cohort to maintain as breeding stock. But all this winnowing down has left us with the vexing question of how to satisfy the demand for more lamb. We could send a couple of our 2 to 3 year old ewes off to become ground meat, but they are really too old to be considered lamb, and we're not sure that even if ground up and slow cooked for hours, the meat's more muttony taste would be appreciated. Casting about for ways we might meet demand, my eyes fell a couple of weeks ago on a nice, ideally sized white lamb, ear tag number 227, who's not quite a year old. Until ago, I hadn't considered this lamb at all. Back when we were selecting lambs to go to market, I kept feeling we were missing a white wether. I was sure it was in the flock, but I didn't see him in the barn. It didn't occur to me that he might be in the separate pasture where we isolate the ewelings we think are too young to begin breeding. But apparently in a moment of rushed sorting several months earlier, I had selected him to be put there. Ear tag 227 has a petite, ewe-like face and seemed to fit quite comfortably in with the others. I apparently assumed that because he was with this sequestered group, that he was a ewe. But turning this creature upside down to do hoof trimming after the other ramblings had already been shipped off to market, I realized my mistake. I had done a good enough job of castrating him, using the rubber band mechanism, which was relatively painless when done as we do it in the first week of life, that there were no hanging testicles to be seen. But he did have the remaining male equipment that revealed him to be a wether. Once I realized this, and it became clear that we needed another candidate to go to market, my thoughts naturally turned to him. But with those thoughts, so also arose the farmer's dilemma. This little unnamed lamb, ear tag 227, is incredibly personable, almost affectionate. Whenever I'd climbed over the fence into the ewelings pasture, most of the ewelings would run the other way, but ear tag 227 would approach in an obviously friendly manner. Rather than recoil from our touch, he indeed seemed to like it. A sort of bond began to form back when I thought he was a ewling, and it now continues to evolve in his incarnation as a wether. It's a bond that potentially conflicts with the dollars and cents business of farming. If you had overheard Peter and me discussing the dilemma over the last couple of weeks, you would have thought we were engaged in a totally rational balancing of cost and benefit to the farm. Our need and desire to keep revenue flowing and to supply potentially good long-term customers suggested we should send them off to market. In contrast, the ostensible need of the flock for a wether, like our late beloved Orhan, who died of old age last summer, suggested a reason to keep him. It's to the flock's benefit to have a leader, which is often the role of the wether, hence the term bellwether. And it's to our benefit to have a wether who's devoted to us as the intermediary between us and the herd. But underneath this dispassionate weighing of the costs and benefits, I think there was more going on. The bond that had been forming between him and us could not be denied. Peter often tells me that I don't have a romantic bone in my body. And it's true, I suppose, that I've never been compelled, after locking eyes with a stranger across a crowded room, to fall in romantic love. In our initial meeting, it was Peter who, hearing me across a crowded room, approached. But there's something about EarTag 227. Even after we recently melded the inhabitants of the Yulings pasture back into the main herd, where we have all these old favorites such as Nilifer, Valentina, and Helena, EarTag 227 has stood out from the crowd in his enthusiastic approaches to us. He's even from a distance begun locking eyes meaningfully with me across the crowded barn, and I have been gazing back. It has reminded Peter of the mutual crush relationship we had with Marina and Cabell, two of our first four ewes. For reasons we could never explain, Marina bonded with me and Cabell with Peter. These things do happen. So many varieties of love. No final decisions have yet been made about EarTag 227's fate. We have some lingering concerns since our farm helper, also named Peter, reported last week that the little wether has been mounting some of the ewes, which may suggest more residual testosterone in his system than we would like. We're going to examine him again closely. But barring an adverse finding on that examination, I suspect our decision has already been made. Before another week goes by, I anticipate EarTag 227 will have assumed the name Orhan Ikinji, Orhan II, becoming a permanent member of the flock. A lifelong romantic bond will be in the making. To me, our resolution of the farmer's dilemma in this case suggests a couple of things. On the one hand, our sacrifice of much-needed revenue in order to bond with this sweet young wether suggests we still have not become the hard-nosed, economically rational actors we need to be in order to succeed financially at farming. On the other hand, it says I may have far more romance in me than Peter gives me credit for.
Peter Davies and his partner Mark Scherzer are proprietors of Turkana Farms, specializing in heritage breeds of livestock on their 40-acre farm in Germantown, New York. Peter also presides over Turkana Odyssey, in which he customizes cultural tours of Turkey for small groups, which he calls an insider's view of Turkey. And his third hat is Turkana Gallery of Old and Antique Kilims, which he operates in the Wall Street area of Manhattan. Mark presides over his law firm, Mark Scherzer Law Office, which specializes in health law, also in the Wall Street area. Their farm website? TurkanaFarms.com. Their email, farm@TurkanaFarms.com, or 518-537-3815.